Chapter 57. Threats, for to threaten, is an indictable offense, but if ever you do that again, take care you're not sat upon by the coroner and buried in a crossroad before you wake. We have been distracted with fears that you were dead, sir, apostrophe said Dick, gently sliding to the ground, and the short and the long of it is that we cannot allow single gentlemen to come into this establishment and sleep like double gentlemen without paying extra for it. Apostrophe, indeed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the lodger. Yes, sir, indeed, apostrophe, returned Dick, yielding to his destiny and saying whatever came uppermost. An equal quantity of slumber was never got out of one bed and bedstead, and if you're going to sleep in that way, you must pay for a double-bedded room. Dot, instead of being thrown into a greater passion by these remarks, the lodger lapsed into a broad grin, and looked at Mr. Swiveller with twinkling eyes. He was a brown-faced sunburnt man, and appeared browner and more sunburnt from having a white nightcap on. As it was clear that he was a choleric fellow in some respects, Mr. Swiveller was relieved to find him in such good humor, and, to encourage him in it, smiled himself. The lodger, in the testiness of being so rudely roused, had pushed his nightcap very much on one side of his bald head. This gave him a rakish eccentric air which, now that he had leisure to observe it, charmed Mr. Swiveller exceedingly. Therefore, by way of propitiation, he expressed his hope that the gentleman was going to get up, and further that he would never do so any more. Come here, you impudent rascal. Apostrophe, apostrophe was the lodger's answer as he re-entered his room. Mr. Swiveller followed him in, leaving the stool outside, but reserving the ruler in case of a surprise. He rather congratulated himself on his prudence when the single gentleman, without notice or explanation of any kind, double-locked the door. Can you drink anything? Apostrophe, apostrophe was his next inquiry. Mr. Swiveller replied that he had very recently been assuaging the pangs of thirst, but that he was still open to a modest quencher, apostrophe if the materials were at hand. Without another word spoken on either side, the lodger took from his great trunk a kind of temple, shining as of polished silver, and placed it carefully on the table. Greatly interested in his proceedings, Mr. Swiveller observed him closely. Into one little chamber of this temple, he dropped an egg, into another some coffee, into a third a compact piece of raw steak from a neat tin case, into a fourth, he poured some water. Then, with the aid of a phosphorus box and some matches, he procured a light, and applied it to a spirit lamp which had a place of its own below the temple. Then, he shut down the lids of all the little chambers. Then he opened them. And then, by some wonderful and unseen agency, the steak was done, the egg was boiled, the coffee was accurately prepared, and his breakfast was ready. Hot water, apostrophe, said the lodger, handing it to Mr. Swiveller with as much coolness as if he had a kitchen fire before him, extraordinary rum, sugar, and a traveling glass. Mix for yourself. And make haste. Apostrophe, Dick complied, his eyes wandering all the time from the temple on the table, which seemed to do everything, to the great trunk which seemed to hold everything. The lodger took his breakfast like a man who was used to work these miracles, and thought nothing of them. The man of the house is a lawyer, is he not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the lodger. Dick nodded. The rum was amazing. The woman of the house, what's she? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a dragon, apostrophe, said Dick. The single gentleman, perhaps because he had met with such things in his travels, or perhaps because he was a single gentleman, evinced no surprise, but merely inquired wife or sister. Apostrophe, apostrophe, sister, apostrophe, said Dick. So much the better, apostrophe, said the single gentleman, he can get rid of her when he likes. Apostrophe, I want to do as I like, young man, apostrophe, he added after a short silence, to go to bed when I like, get up when I like, come in when I like, go out when I like to be asked no questions, and be surrounded by no spies. In this last respect, servants are the devil. There's only one here. Apostrophe, and a very little one, apostrophe said Dick. And a very little one, apostrophe repeated the lodger. Well, the place will suit me, will it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, apostrophe said Dick. Sharks, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe said the lodger. Dick nodded assent, and drained his glass. Let them know my humor, apostrophe said the single gentleman, rising. If they disturb me, they lose a good tenant. If they know me to be that, they know enough. If they try to know more, it's a notice to quit. It's better to understand these things at once. Good day. Apostrophe, I beg your pardon, apostrophe said Dick, halting in his passage to the door, which the lodger prepared to open. When he who adores thee has left, but the name apostrophe, what do you mean? Apostrophe, 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 but the name, apostrophe said Dick has left, but the name in case of letters, or parcels apostrophe, I never have any, apostrophe returned the lodger. Or in the case anybody should call. Apostrophe, nobody ever calls on me. Apostrophe, if any mistake should arise from not having the name, don't say it was my fault, sir, apostrophe added Dick, still lingering. Oh, blame not the bard, apostrophe, I'll blame nobody, apostrophe said the lodger, with such irascibility, that in a moment Dick found himself on the staircase, and the locked door between them. Mr. Brass and Miss Sally were lurking hard by, having been, indeed, only routed from the keyhole by Mr. Swiveller's abrupt exit. As their utmost exertions had not enabled them to overhear a word of the interview, however, in consequence of a quarrel for precedence, which, though limited of necessity to pushes, and pinches and such quiet pantomime, had lasted the whole time, they hurried him down to the office, to hear his account of the conversation. This Mr. Swiveller gave them faithfully as regarded the wishes and character of the single gentleman, and poetically as concerned the great trunk, of which he gave a description more remarkable for brilliancy of imagination than a strict adherence to truth, declaring, with many strong asseverations, that it contained a specimen of every kind of rich food and wine, known in these times, and in particular, that it was of a self-acting kind, and served up whatever was required, as he supposed by clockwork. He also gave them to understand, that the cooking apparatus roasted a fine piece of sirloin of beef, weighing about 6 pounds avoirdupois, in 2 minutes and a quarter, as he had himself witnessed, and proved by his sense of taste, and further, that, however the effect was produced, he had distinctly seen water boil and bubble up when the single gentleman winked, from which facts he, Mr. Swiveller, was led to infer, that the lodger was some great conjurer or chemist, or both, whose residence under that roof, could not fail at some future days to shed a great credit and distinction on the name of Brass, and add a new interest to the history of Bevis Marks. There was one point which Mr. Swiveller deemed it unnecessary to enlarge upon, and that was the fact of the modest quencher, which, by reason of its intrinsic strength, and its coming close upon the heels of the temperate beverage he had discussed at dinner, awakened a slight degree of fever, and rendered necessary 2 or 3 other modest quenchers at the public house in the course of the evening. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.